Have you ever thought about, like, when saying something, seeing something goes from being a good idea to like a serious legal thing, like
Yeah.
when it really matters? Well, today we're going really deep into this case, Lebeau v. State of Indiana.
Oh yeah, a little bit
This
about.
case is super important for, understanding mandated reporting.
Yeah.
Every lawyer, especially the ones going into family or criminal law, really needs to know this stuff.
Yeah, for sure. This deep dive, we're going to be looking at the Lebeau v. State of Indiana decision, and we're really going to focus in on how the court handled the statute of limitations when someone didn't report child abuse. And then we'll also look at, like, what exactly is a continuing offense and concealment? And what do those terms mean according to Indiana law?
Right, because that really changes when the clock starts ticking, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So to help us make sense of this case, we've got a ton of materials.
Yeah.
It's like a cheat sheet for
That's a
Lebeau.
good way to put it.
We have excerpts that, guide us through the podcast, the key legal points, all the main parts of the story, and even some traps to avoid when you're trying to figure out what the ruling means.
Yeah.
And of course, we have full case briefs, both the detailed kind and the standard one. So you'll
Nice.
really get a good handle on this case.
You got it.
So our goal today is to make sure you, especially if you're a law student, understand the main legal issues in Lebeau v. State of Indiana.
Yes.
We're going to break it all down, give you those takeaways that'll help you with your studies and your future as a lawyer.
Absolutely. Especially those situations where you have to decide, do I report suspected child abuse or neglect or not?
Right, that's a big one.
Yeah, this case shows just how complicated and important these laws are.
So let's get into it.
Let's do it.
The Lebeau case is really this interesting legal battle. It's about this conflict between the duty to report suspected child abuse and how long Indiana law gives you to take legal action.
That's right.
That whole statute of limitations thing.
Exactly.
So in Indiana, there are certain people called mandated reporters. If they have reason to believe a child's been abused or neglected, they have to report it.
It's the law.
It's the law. And Lebeau goes deep into what happens when someone doesn't do that and like when they can be held responsible, even if a lot of time has passed.
Yeah, it's a key area for any aspiring lawyer because you're dealing with legal duties and protecting vulnerable people.
Totally. And it goes beyond just the law,
It
right? So
does.
there's like a huge ethical side to this
Oh, for
too.
sure.
So let's say you're in a position of trust, like a teacher or a supervisor, and you see signs that a child might be getting hurt. Ethically, what should you do? How does that line up with the law?
That's a really important point because ethically, you have to protect children. That's like the number one thing.
Right.
And Lebeau really makes us think about how that ethical responsibility fits with the actual laws, like what the statutes say and procedural limits, like statutes of limitations. It's a balancing act.
So let's get into the specifics of the case.
Okay. We've got Mary Beth Lebeau, who was a high school volleyball coach,
Right.
and she was also the supervisor for the junior coach, Robert Ashcraft.
Yeah. And the tragic part is that between 2007 and 2008, Ashcraft sexually abused a minor who the court called KT.
Wow.
And that's the background for this whole legal fight against Lebeau, because she was a mandated reporter and she had a legal duty to report any suspicion of abuse.
So it wasn't like she had no idea, right?
Well, it's not like she was totally in the dark.
She actually saw some specific things Ashcraft was doing with KT that were not okay.
That's right.
It wasn't just like a gut feeling.
Exactly.
So what exactly did she see?
So the records show that Lebeau saw and even wrote down some specific instances where Ashcraft was acting inappropriately with KT. For example, she saw Ashcraft sitting between KT's legs while they were watching a movie.
Oh, wow.
And another time she saw him sharing food with KT on a bus in a way that just seemed off, like putting his arm around her.
Oh, my gosh. And here's the thing. These observations were actually written down in Ashcraft's personnel file.
Oh,
So
wow.
she knew something was up.
So she clearly saw these things and she was a mandated reporter. She had to report this, right?
You would think so, right? But she didn't report any of it to the authorities.
And it gets even worse, right?
Yeah, it does.
What happened?
The investigation later found out that Lebeau actually told her volleyball players to keep quiet about what Ashcraft was doing.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and that becomes a really important part of this legal puzzle because it directly affects how the court decided about the statute of limitations.
Oh, wow. So it wasn't just that she didn't do anything, it was that she actively tried to cover it up.
Exactly.
So after all this happened with Lebeau not reporting and telling the players to stay quiet, what happened next?
So Ashcraft ended up resigning from his coaching job, in October 2008.
Okay.
And then it wasn't until January 2010 that the Indiana State Police, or ISP, started looking into it. They wanted to know if anyone at the school like Labo had failed to report the suspected abuse.
So that's when they found out about what Labo did and what she told the players.
Exactly. That's when everything came to light.
And did that investigation lead to charges against Labo?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Based on what the ISP found, the state of Indiana filed charges against Labo in September 2011.
Okay.
She was charged with 2 counts of failure to report child abuse or neglect under Indiana law.
So we've got the facts of the case and the charges.
Right.
Now let's get into the really complicated legal stuff that the court had to deal with.
Let's do it.
What were the big legal questions they had to figure out?
Okay. So there were a few really important legal questions that came up, and these are things every law student should know.
Okay.
The first one, and maybe the biggest one, was about the statute of limitations.
Okay.
So in Indiana, you only have 2 years to prosecute someone for a misdemeanor. And Lebo's lawyers argued that because the abuse happened between 2007 and 2008, and she wasn't charged until 2011, that it was too late to prosecute her.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, seems pretty straightforward at first glance.
Yeah, so what did the prosecution say to that?
Well, that's where the second big legal question comes in.
Okay.
The prosecution said that not reporting child abuse should actually be considered a continuing offense.
A continuing offense.
Yeah, so we'll explain that in more detail. But basically it means if a crime keeps happening, the time limit doesn't start until it stops.
Okay.
This is a really important concept because it can change when those legal deadlines kick in.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then there's the whole thing with Labo telling those players to stay quiet.
Right, right.
So how did the court interpret that legally?
Yeah, what did they say about that?
That leads us to the third big legal question.
Mm.
Did what Labo did telling her players to stay silent, did that count as concealment under the law?
Okay.
And if the court said yes, then that could actually pause or, as they say, toll the statute of limitations.
Oh, really?
Yeah, meaning the clock wouldn't be ticking while she was concealing the abuse.
Wow.
So that's another important legal concept because it can extend the time frame for legal action.
And there was one more question, right?
The last big question was about those legal documents that charged Labo with the crime.
Uh-huh.
Were they clear and specific enough? Did she actually have enough information from those documents to get ready for her defense?
That makes sense.
Yeah, so those are the four key legal questions that the court had to grapple with.
Okay, so the court had all these tough legal questions to answer.
Yeah.
Let's break down how they actually responded, starting with that whole continuing offense thing.
Okay, so what's really interesting here is the court's logic about the continuing offense doctrine.
Okay.
They basically said that a mandated reporter's duty to report isn't a one-time thing that just disappears if you don't do it right away.
Okay.
They said this duty continues until either a report is made to the right people or until the authorities find out some other way.
Oh, I see.
So in Lebo's case, the court said her duty to report kept going until October 2010 when the ISP investigation uncovered what she had done.
Okay.
And that means, according to the court, the statute of limitations didn't even start until then.
Oh, wow.
So this really emphasizes how serious and ongoing this responsibility is for mandated reporters.
I see. That makes sense.
Yeah. It shifts the focus away from that one moment when they might have failed to report and looks at it as an ongoing failure to do their duty.
So is there like another way to think about this?
Sure.
An analogy that maybe a law student could relate to?
Think about a lawyer who has an ethical duty to keep their client's information confidential.
Okay.
If that lawyer keeps sharing confidential stuff over time, that's a continuous ethical violation, and there could be consequences that go way beyond that first time they shared something.
Oh, I see.
It's similar in Labo. The court saw this duty to report as this ongoing legal and professional obligation that's tied to the safety and well-being of children.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we've got this ongoing duty. Now let's talk about the concealment part.
Okay.
How did the court decide that what Labo said to those players was actually concealment that could pause the statute of limitations?
This is a really crucial part of the ruling, and it has big implications.
Yeah.
The court said that Labo telling those players not to talk about Ashcraft's behavior wasn't just her staying quiet or not coming forward herself.
Okay.
They saw it as her taking a step to stop people from finding out about the abuse, and importantly, to stop people from finding out that she didn't report it.
Wow.
And it's that active step to hide the truth that triggers this legal thing called tolling the statute of limitations.
Okay.
What the court decided was that because of this act of concealment, the charges against Lebo could be filed within 2 years after the concealment ended or was discovered.
Oh, so that's why the 2011 charges were allowed.
Exactly.
Even though it had been years since the abuse.
Exactly.
That's really interesting.
This really shows that when you intentionally try to hide something wrong, it can have big legal consequences when it comes to these time limits.
So even if the court hadn't fully agreed with the whole continuing offense argument, just this finding of active concealment by itself could have been enough for the prosecution to move forward with the case.
You got it.
Even with all that time that had passed.
Yeah. The court gave two separate reasons for saying the charges against Lebo weren't too late.
Okay.
They used both the continuing offense doctrine and the concealment exception.
Okay.
Either one of those could have been enough to support the prosecution's argument.
Oh, wow.
So that dual reasoning just shows how strong the prosecution's case was in the court's eyes.
And what about Lebo's argument that the charges against her weren't detailed enough?
Right.
What did the court say about that?
So the court decided that the charging documents were specific enough, especially when you look at them, along with the probable cause affidavit.
Okay.
They pointed out that the documents clearly said who the victim was, KT, and they gave the time frame of the misconduct, August 2007 to October 2008.
Uh-huh.
And they mentioned specific behaviors that were observed, like that inappropriate food sharing incident on the bus with KT.
I see.
So the court felt that even though the documents didn't lay out every single piece of evidence the prosecution had,
yeah,
they did give Lebo enough important information so she could understand the charges and start building her defense.
That makes sense.
Yeah. The court emphasized that the main purpose of charging documents in our legal system is to tell the accused person what they're being charged with,
uh-huh,
so they can prepare a defense.
Yeah.
And the court said that the details in Lebo's case, especially when you look at them alongside the probable cause affidavit, were enough to meet that legal standard.
It sounds like the majority of the court was pretty clear and united in how they answered those legal questions.
It does seem that way.
But I know that in a lot of complicated legal cases, there can be different ways of looking at things.
For sure.
Were there any judges who disagreed with the majority opinion in this case?
Yeah, that's a really important point.
Okay.
While most of the court agreed that the charges against Lebo were not too late.
Yeah.
There were some differences in how they got to that decision.
Okay.
So Judge Bradford wrote the main opinion for the majority, but Judge Baker wrote a separate opinion where he agreed with some parts and disagreed with others.
I see.
He had a different take on some of the key legal issues.
Interesting. So what parts did Judge Bradford and Judge Baker agree on?
So they both agreed that Lebo telling the players to stay quiet counted as concealment.
Uh-huh.
And that this concealment stopped the statute of limitations from running.
Okay.
But Judge Baker didn't agree with the majority's idea that not reporting in this situation should be seen as a continuing offense.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's a major difference of opinion, and it shows that there are different ways to understand this legal duty to report.
So what was Judge Baker's reasoning for not agreeing with the continuing offense idea in this case?
Okay. So his argument was that the legal duty to report kicks in at a specific moment.
Okay.
When a mandated reporter like Lebo decides that it's reasonable to believe child abuse or neglect has happened.
Uh-huh.
He saw not reporting at that moment as more of a single failure to act.
Okay.
With consequences that might continue, but not as a crime that's constantly happening over time.
So he was making a distinction between a continuous action and not doing something you're supposed to at a certain point.
Exactly.
That's a subtle but important difference.
Yeah, and Judge Baker also brought up a really important point about whether Lebo even had enough information to trigger her duty to report in the first place.
Right, that whole reason to believe standard.
Yeah.
So what did he say about that?
He said that based on what Lebo knew, the things she saw, it's not clear if she actually had enough to reasonably believe that a crime was being committed.
Specifically sexual abuse.
Right. And that brings up a big question that future lawyers are going to have to deal
with. Yeah.
Where exactly is the line for a mandated reporter? When do they have enough to believe abuse is happening and have to report it?
Right. That's a good question.
Yeah, it's not always black and white.
So it sounds like Judge Baker was saying that maybe Lebo didn't have enough information to be legally required to report anything.
Yeah. That was his point.
And that really gets to the heart of these mandated reporting laws, right?
Absolutely. It shows how tricky it can be to apply these laws in real life situations where the signs might not be obvious or could be interpreted in different ways.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It really highlights that tension between needing to protect kids, and making sure people who are accused of not following the law are treated fairly.
Right.
Judge Bradford, in the majority opinion, stressed that the legal standard for mandated reporters is reason to believe.
Okay.
And they set that bar lower than needing to be totally certain or seeing the abuse yourself.
Okay.
That lower standard is meant to encourage people to report when they have reasonable suspicion, because a child's safety is the priority.
So this case really comes down to understanding some key legal ideas that are super important for anyone studying law.
For sure.
So let's define a few of these.
Oh.
First, what does reason to believe actually mean when we're talking about mandated reporting in Indiana?
So according to Indiana Code 3133-5, a mandated reporter has to make a report if they have reason to believe that a child is being abused or neglected.
Okay.
And that's a key point.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't mean they have to see the abuse happening or have absolute proof.
Okay.
It's more about having suspicion that's based on real facts, believable information, or reasonable conclusions from what they've seen that would make a reasonable person in the same situation think abuse might be happening.
So it's not just a random guess or a hunch.
Exactly. It's about having a good reason to be suspicious.
Okay. I get it.
Yeah.
Can you give us like a real life example to show the difference between reason to believe and actually knowing for sure in this situation?
Sure. Imagine you're a school counselor and you notice that a child seems scared and anxious around a specific adult.
Okay.
Maybe the child gets quiet or upset whenever that adult is near.
Mm-hmm.
The counselor hasn't seen any abuse directly, so they don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But the way the child acts around that adult could give them reason to believe that something's wrong.
Okay.
And that would mean they have a duty to report their concerns to the authorities so they can investigate.
So the child's behavior is like the evidence that triggers the duty to report.
Right.
Okay, that example makes things a lot clearer.
Good.
So let's go back to that continuing offense doctrine.
Okay.
We used some analogies earlier, but can you give us a more formal definition of what this legal idea means?
Yeah, so the continuing offense doctrine is a legal principle that's used for certain crimes that happen over a period of time.
Not just one single thing.
Right. It's a pattern of illegal behavior.
Okay.
The important thing is that the illegal activity keeps happening or happens again and again. So when it comes to the statute of limitations, if a crime is a continuing offense, then the time limit for prosecuting doesn't start until all the illegal stuff is stopped.
Oh, I see.
The idea behind this is that the harm from these kinds of crimes keeps building up over time.
Okay, so like that embezzlement example we talked about earlier.
That's a good
Someone's point. Stealing little bits of money over a long time.
Yeah.
That's seen as one crime, not a bunch of separate thefts for statute of limitations purposes.
That's right. Each time they steal money, it adds to the bigger crime of embezzlement, and it doesn't stop being a crime until they stop taking the money.
And the court in Lebo kind of used that same logic for not reporting.
Yes.
They saw it as a continuous failure to fulfill a duty that kept going until someone else found out.
Precisely.
Okay, that makes sense.
And last but not least, let's define concealment tolling. What needs to happen for something to be considered legal concealment that can actually pause or extend the statute of limitations.
Hmm.
Concealment tolling basically means pausing the clock on the statute of limitations because the person being accused did something to stop the other side or the authorities from finding out about what they did wrong.
Okay.
It usually takes more than just staying quiet or not sharing information.
Okay.
There has to be some intentional action to hide the facts or mislead the investigation.
So in Lebo, what did the court say was the intentional action?
The court specifically said that Lebo telling the volleyball players to keep quiet about Ashcraft's behavior was that affirmative act of concealment.
Cook.
It was a direct attempt to bury information that could have exposed the abuse and her failure to report it.
So just not saying anything even when you're supposed to might not be enough to be considered concealment.
Right.
But telling other people not to talk about it, that could be crossing the line.
Yes, that's a really important difference to understand. Not reporting something when you're supposed to could be the basis of the charge itself.
Huh.
But it's those extra deliberate actions to stop people from finding out about that failure or the abuse itself that are more likely to be seen as active concealment for tolling the statute of limitations.
I see.
The key is that there was an intent to stop people from finding out.
Oh, okay. That's helpful.
Yeah.
So this case is a really big deal.
Yes, it is.
And it has important implications for anyone who's a mandated reporter.
Absolutely.
It's not just some abstract legal concept.
Not at all.
The Lebo case is a real and serious reminder about the legal responsibilities of mandated reporters.
It is.
It shows that if you have a reasonable suspicion that reason to believe standard,
yeah,
that a child might be abused or neglected, you have a real legal duty to act.
Uh-huh.
And there can be serious legal consequences if you don't. And it also shows how these specific legal doctrines, like continuing offense and especially concealment, can really change how statutes of limitations work in cases where someone didn't report abuse.
Yeah, they're not just technicalities.
Yeah.
They can determine whether someone can be held accountable years after the fact.
And those doctrines are there for a reason, right?
Yes. They're there to address situations where the harm might be ongoing or where someone is intentionally trying to hide what they did wrong.
By concealing information.
Right.
And the Lebo case shows that the courts are willing to use these doctrines in mandated reporting cases to make sure kids are protected.
Yeah, that's a key takeaway.
And for all the future lawyers listening, the Lebo case also teaches us about how courts look at charging documents and how they consider other materials like probable cause affidavits to figure out if a defendant was given enough information about the charges against them.
Yeah, it shows that charging documents need to have enough basic information so the defendant understands the charges and can prepare a defense.
Okay.
But they don't have to spell out every single piece of evidence the prosecution is going to use.
So courts look at everything together.
Yeah, the whole picture.
Okay, that's really interesting.
It is.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Lebo v. State of Indiana, what are the absolute most important things we want our listeners to remember?
Okay, so here are the key takeaways.
Okay.
First, if you're a mandated reporter, you have a legal duty to report when you have reason to believe that a child is being abused or neglected.
Okay.
You don't need to be absolutely sure or see it happen yourself.
Reason to believe.
That's the standard.
Okay, got it.
Second, you need to know how legal doctrines like continuing offense and concealment can change how the statute of limitations works in cases where someone didn't report abuse.
Right. Those doctrines can be really important.
They can.
What's the third takeaway?
When courts decide if charging documents are good enough, they look at whether the person accused has enough info to understand the charges and get ready for their defense.
Okay.
And they might look at other documents too, like the probable cause affidavit.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
This case really shows the connection between legal duties, ethical responsibilities, and a person's right to due process.
It does.
So as you move forward in your legal careers, how are you going to handle situations where you suspect something's wrong, but you're not totally sure?
Right.
What can we learn from the Lebo case about finding that balance between protecting vulnerable people and making sure the legal system is fair?
Yeah, that's a great question.
It's definitely a case that gives us a lot to think about as we continue learning about the law.
I agree.